And thank you for listening to Making Contact.
Former New Mexico Governor Bruce King once opposed a bill because, he said, he feared it would open a whole box of Pandoras. An odd rhetorical twist, but it would be helpful if today's ego-bloated high-tech billionaires and corporate profiteers had a bit of Bruce's self-restraint, rather than thinking their money equals genius. For example, such doofuses are presently pushing convoluted schemes to solve our globe's technology-caused climate crisis with, what else? Technology. Their latest box of Pandoras includes a grandiose plan to geoengineer carbon dioxide, the destructive gas spewed into our air by the production and use of fossil fuels. The geniuses say they have the techno know-how to suck up that bad gas and pump it a mile deep into the earth. See? Problem gone. All they need, they say, is for taxpayers to put up trillions of dollars. Who's behind this hustle? Oil giants. Yes, the same prevaricating snake oil salesmen who cause most of the suffocating CO2 pollution that's rapidly cooking our planet. Such petro-peddlers as Occidental Petroleum are now trying to rebrand themselves as, quote, carbon management experts, asking us to trust them to re-engineer our atmosphere. But their magical vacuum cleaner in the sky won't remove even 1% of the new carbon emissions released every year. Worse, Occidental says it will keep much of the CO2 it vacuums up, using the gas to force more oil out of the ground, thus creating more global warming. Occidental CEO says geoengineering, quote, gives our industry a license to continue to operate for 60, 70, 80 years. This is Jim Hightower saying, razzle-dazzle technology is not a climate solution. It's a business-as-usual lie told by profiteers desperate to keep burning fossil fuels and our globe. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You are listening to WDRT Barroqua 91.9 FM.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week. Today on Sprouts, we feature an interview with Karen Mischel, mayor of Viroqua, Wisconsin, and candidate for Wisconsin State Assembly. This interview is produced by Heartland Stories Radio, a weekly show featuring interviews about the future of food, farming, and public health. Listen now as host Teresa Marquez introduces Karen Mischel.
I'm Teresa Marquez, and I'm here today with Mayor of Viroqua, Wisconsin, since 2018, Karen Mischel. Karen spent 17 years in the Merchant Marines, and after retiring, she returned to her hometown of Viroqua, and she pursued a career as an organic inspector and has been working as an organic farm inspector since 2015. Welcome, Mayor Karen.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you so much for having me.
It is just so fun to learn that you are from Crawford County in Wisconsin, and you were on a family farm, and you milked cows.
We did. We had a dairy with approximately 40 cows that we milked.
Boy, those were the old days when there were lots and lots of 40-cow farms.
Right.
And that was, all these rural towns had a small creamery. Now, wow, what a change. And then you went on to become a merchant marine, and I am so kind of intrigued with what it must have been like to be on a ship a lot of times, 17 years. Karen, how did you hold out during that?
Well, the really interesting part of that is that when I first joined the merchant marines, women were not typically on ships. So it was kind of groundbreaking at the time. And really, when I went to join the Seafarers International Union to set out across the seas, they had basically one question, and that was, can you cook? Because naturally, I was a woman, so can you cook? And I said, yes. I had actually had a catering business in San Francisco at the time. And so they decided that I would go in the steward department because that handles the food. And it was really interesting as the years went by. I recognized that had I had my choice, I would have gone in the deck department because I would have certainly been captain given the opportunity. But
wouldn't that be fun? Woman captain on top of it. Well, you know, I saw that as you were in the Merchant Marines, one of the things that you did was you were in charge of managing the food, weren't you, for a lot of the ships that you were in? And you did say something about being a caterer, but I also read you went to community college for sign language.
Sign language and education, yeah.
And that just really got to my heart, that you were thinking about deaf people, that you wanted to service them. What do you think, I mean, what attracted you to being in this, you know, role of education and really servicing people who clearly have a handicap?
You know, that's interesting. I think for me, what drew me to wanting to teach deaf children is the education piece of it. But also, too, if you watch children speak to each other in sign language, they have so much passion and just their expression that, you know, I think that's originally what drew me to it, is I really wanted to kind of be a part of that joy that they and just the emotion that they express without using the words, the vocal words. And you know, to me, that was just something so intriguing of how do you express who you are without being able to use the words that we use. And then, you know, of course, education was something that was part of my family, and I just wanted to continue with that.
Well, you know, when I think about being on a ship, it seems to me that that's the epitome of group living. You are, sometimes for months, is it, with the same people together trying to get along, get something done. And at one point in time, you say in one of your descriptions of being as a merchant marine that besides for the captain, you were one of the most loved or most hated on it. And why was that? What did your job there do? By the way, that seemed to be great preparation for being mayor. But I wondered what was it, and what did you learn there that maybe you took with you to your political life?
Well, and I think that's, you know, that's an interesting aspect that I came across while, you know, coming from a small family farm in Crawford County to suddenly finding myself in San Francisco and deciding to set out around the world with cultures that I'd never been exposed to before. And, you know, I was the chief steward on the ship, and so it was my job to order all the provisions for our next up to 4 to 6 weeks out to sea. And I was the head chef, so I had to make sure we had all the food. And, you know, so we on the ships, we work 12 to 15 hours a day every single day for the 4 months we're out there, and you don't have a day off. And the one thing that you really look forward to is sitting down together and having a meal. And, you know, a good steward or a good chef can really make or break the morale on a ship.
I believe that.
And so, you know, and there's a certain level of, as long as you have enough coffee and toilet paper, you're going to survive. But, you know, you got to make sure that you're really being mindful of all the different cultures. And for me as a woman being in charge of the department that was primarily from cultures that didn't necessarily, that wasn't ingrained in them that you take a direction from a woman, I really had to learn how to communicate with them in a way that empowered them to do their job without having that hesitation or that culture shock of having a woman in charge. And I would say I also had quite a reputation in the industry of being expecting a lot from my crew and having, you know, wanting to provide higher level meals than a lot of the chief stewards were. So there was always a lot of fear when I came on. I'm like, oh no, you know, what is she going to make it to? But I think that was the one thing that I really was able to take into my transition of public office, whether it was on the county board here in Bergen County or as a mayor, and just to be able to say, look, you know, we didn't necessarily come at this from the same viewpoint, but we really all want the same thing. We're all trying to provide a good life for us on the ship. So let's work together and get it done.
Well, it sounds to me that you had a lot of experiences that really helped you with your communication skills for people who were mad at you, who didn't like you, who didn't agree with you, and yet you were able to, 17 years, keep doing it and get a pretty good reputation for doing it. And so I guess that must be a lot like what it must be like to be mayor.
It really is. And, you know, I think what you want to do most when you put yourself in this position is, you know, just people want to be heard. People want to be able to express to you what they feel about something. And if you come into it thinking that your ideas and your agendas are the only thing that matter, it's just going to create more conflict. And so I think just being able to communicate to people that, you know, in the end of the day, we all really want the same thing. You know, we all want nice, safe communities to live in. We all want to be able to put food on the table and provide for our families and have a nice home and have health care. And, you know, we just, it's how we come about it. But if you go into it with a conflict in your own mind and in your own heart, it's not going to come across as wanting to provide. It's just going to come across as conflict, and we don't get anywhere that way.
You know, that so feels so right to me, what you just said. While you were saying it, I was going, yeah, how come we don't put more emphasis on the things that we agree on instead of the things that we disagree on? I think that we are more alike than we are different. And so as you have worked your way through, you know, being mayor in a very, seems to me, transitioning city right now, where lots of different people are moving in, a lot of diversity is moving in, at least certainly in the political ways. Are you finding that you're going back to applying those kinds of skills to?
Oh, for sure. You know, and I think when I was first elected mayor, the divide in this community of the people who always lived here and the people who have moved in, it felt bigger at the time. And I can't really speak for the people who live here if they feel like maybe we've taken some steps. You know, as a city, we have tried to foster a more open communication with each other. There's some pretty extreme views that still happen. And on a regular basis, I still get emails of, oh, the new people in town have destroyed the city. And, you know, and change is hard. I think, you know, I say to people all the time, and you know, I just came out of an organic inspection meeting, a round table about inspecting livestock and how can we do better? And all the, you know, basically my takeaway at the end was, you know, change is hard. And I use that in that realm. I use that as the mayor, and just recognizing that people giving up what they're used to is difficult. And we can't ignore the fact that things are difficult. But, you know, I just think that together we can work together to take steps toward that change and not make it feel like it's the end of the world, or, you know, your life is going to be dramatically horrible, or, you know, it's just, people want to be heard. And I think that's what it comes down to for me, is just even the people who I completely disagree with 100% on, the new people in town or the people who have always been here make this community what it is. And, you know, we brought up my family, and I look to, you know, my cousins, who that's their work, is how to, mm-hmm. how to do nonviolent communication and how to work together for a cause without creating that tension and discourse. You're going to have it, and you have to have it. No growth happens in this community without hard conversations and recognizing the things that we need to talk about. But it's, how are you going to talk about it? Are you going to talk about it as a community and try to come up with a solution together? Or are you going to come in with your preconceived ideas and just try to butt heads until who's the last man standing? And we don't really get anywhere that way.
Amen. Well, I will say that one of my themes is that we have a lot of solutions. We do have solutions for everything. We are more alike than we're different. And yet our biggest problem is we just don't work together well. You know, I'm really glad that you brought up that you were an organic inspector, because I really wanted to talk a lot about your involvement with food. I just will say the Heartland Research Project, which funds Heartland Stories Radio, is about looking at herbicide use and seeing what its impact has been on moms and infants, which there's a tremendous amount of evidence right now in the medical world that its impact, because we over doubled it and we're using the worst ones. And of course, you may know this more than anyone because you're an organics inspector. But here you were raised on a family farm, 40 cows, you know how to milk cows, and, you know, maybe occasionally you even stand in for someone who needs to have a milker as an emergency.
I do say that sometimes. I'm not so sure that I would actually want to follow through with that, but it's fun to offer. It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. I mean, there's a lot of things have changed.
Right.
But, you know, as an organic inspector, you were still in the food. You were in food as a merchant marine. Now you're in food again as an inspector. And you're still doing that as well as being mayor. Right. I wondered if you'd tell us a little bit about what's it like to be an organic inspector right now, having your farming background, also being a mayor. I mean, how are you managing it all? And, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I think it kind of seemed like a natural progression when I became the mayor, because I wanted to bring those same values that we hold close and what we're promoting as organic inspectors. I wanted to bring that to our community as well, you know, and for me to go out and see the difference that the organic farmers are making on our soil health, on the way that we grow crops and what we provide to people in our community for food. And, you know, when I worked as a merchant marine, I not only traveled around the world, but I also traveled to almost every port in the country. And in America, I, you know, growing up in this area, I didn't realize how special it was that we have the access to organic food and fresh food and our farmers markets and our food co-ops. So when I would pull into these other ports, it was my job to source the food for the ship to head back out, and just to recognize that we here in this driftless area are doing things really well, and we're very fortunate to have it. And so when I was elected mayor, I wanted to take what I've learned from our local organic farmers and really implement what I could here in the city. So one of my first things that I did was bring to city council a ban on the city using any glyphosate products or herbicides that would not be organic approved on any of our city property. And I really thought that there was no way that that was ever going to pass. I thought it was like, this is, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to see if this works. And it did. And, you know, some of our folks that are more involved in the parks and things kind of had some trouble working with that. But it happened, and here we are. And you know, and also too, the city owns quite a few acres of land that we rent out to farmers because we don't need it right now. Mm-hmm. And so last year I brought forth, you know, our leases are up. And if we really, as a city of Viroqua, which we have transitioned to being very mindful of our environmental impact, climate change, how can we create initiatives for new business to come in and really focus on their energy efficiency and how is their impact affecting the climate? If we as a city are welcoming you, this is something that we want to be mindful of. So I thought, you know, here we have all this land and we just keep renting it out to conventional farmers who are spraying crops and making it difficult to kind of practice what we preach, right? If we're saying that this is how we want our city to be perceived, then we need to do it across the board. So I took to city council that we were going to lease out land, but now it has to be managed organically. If you're a farmer and you want to lease land from the city of Viroqua, you don't have to certify it because that's a, you know, process, mm-hmm. but it has to be managed organically. And trust me when I say that did not go over well or easy. And the city actually lost a fair amount of revenue from farmers that didn't want to follow that. But then I recognized that I wasn't fully bringing forth my knowledge and my own passion. And I put myself to task and saying, okay, now you want to do this. But when I brought forth the lease, it wasn't long enough for a farmer to actually be able to transition it. So then we came back and said, okay, now we want to make it possible for farmers to transition this land if they want to. And so then we changed the lease again. And I think each time we bring these things forward and we really take a stand as a local government that we want to be a leader in this community on how to support soil health and the organic practices, we just have to keep doing it. And it's becoming less and less controversial. And I'm just so proud of our city council for getting on board. And, you know, it's been passing unanimously, which is not something I ever thought I would see, honestly.
I am so proud of the city council for that. I'm wondering whether, you know, we just aren't looking at the facts enough. I mean, 37% of our greenhouse gases are from agriculture. We've lost a third of our topsoil. Right. You know, we can't talk about, I mean, over and over again, I interview people who keep moaning about the fact that we only value profit and we don't put a value on soil, clean water, and air. And
exactly.
To talk to a mayor who has those values, that's why I was so excited to interview you, because I knew that you were an organic inspector. So I thought, she has to know these facts.
You know, and I think that's an important point. You know, at some point, and even rural communities have to take a look at their impact beyond just the revenue. It can't just be about how much money we're making. We have to really take a stand in our stormwater runoff and how what we are allowing people in our community to do affects beyond just our community. And, you know, I'm really proud to say that that's something that we've brought forward and hope to continue as we move on.
You're listening to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Today, you're listening to an interview with Karen Mischel, produced by Heartland Stories Radio, a weekly radio show exploring food, farming, and public health. We return now to our interview.
I had a big question for you, which is really one of the big reasons I wanted to interview you. And that's because, you know, I've been working with this Heartland study for 5 years. And what inspired me or made me sad and then inspired me was there's 900 employees, you know, at the place I worked before, Krupp Co-op. And many of the women were on their second and third pregnancies and were having spontaneous abortions. And that now is a norm. And I started looking into it and I learned a bunch of things from the medical profession. And a lot of the doctors, they said, oh, that's the June effect. And I would ask doctors in other states saying, have you ever heard of the June effect in Indiana, in Illinois, and that I had met through my work? And they went, oh, yeah, that's when they spray the most. And so that's when women have the most abortions or spontaneous abortions. Mm-hmm. Here we're so concerned about, you know, our right to life, but, you know, in here we have a whole group of women who are just not being exposed to herbicides very well. You mostly, when you talk to politicians about it, they don't want to talk about it, but yet it seems like that's an important role of people in the political realm, and I wondered how you felt about that as, you know, mayor and potentially assembly rep, I hope, in the future.
Right. Well, thank you for pointing that out. We do, as politicians or leaders of our community, have a responsibility to get that message out there. You know, I think oftentimes when we decide to enter the political world, whether it be as a mayor or this campaign that I've started for the state assembly, that we have to recognize that we have a responsibility to put that message out there. Because if we don't start educating people and really trying to change what we're doing right now, the healthcare costs and the effects that people are going to feel because of the spontaneous abortions or the countless other health effects that come across by having those diets or allowing those practices to happen, we're going to have to pay for it eventually. And as a politician or even, you know, just a leader, I believe in being proactive, not reactive. And if our only mission is to figure out how we're going to support the pharmaceutical industry that's going to then have to take care, you know, I don't believe that that's the only way to take care of it. But, you know, oftentimes it feels like the direction that our politicians are taking is that, well, let's just make sure that they can get the drugs that they need once they're sick. And it's just not healthy for our environment. It's not for our political environment and for our citizens. How about we be proactive and do what we can as, whether you're in your own city or in your state capital or in Washington, D.C., let's start supporting initiatives that are going to change how we grow our food and how we interact with our environment so that we don't have to worry about those things. People are going to get sick, but how about we start investing in making sure that they don't? And then take care of people when they do. You know, we have to provide health care, universal health care. Not everybody has access to the good food that we are blessed to have here. And, you know, if we're not making that available, and the only thing that people can afford to get because of the low wages, or they have to choose between whether they're going to run and get the most convenient unhealthy food or pay for their health insurance because they have to come up with that out of pocket, we're not creating an opportunity for people to make the best choices for them.
Karen, very well said. And I also wanted to thank you also for leading a charge to get herbicides out of our parks, because that's where children play a lot. And that's a big deal now. We don't want children playing on lawns that have been sprayed. We don't want our dogs there either, or we don't want ourselves there, but especially children and pregnant women. So that's an important, I think, move that I want to thank you so much for. Going back to organic inspection and organic in general, I just am curious about something. You know, I hear all the time, oh, you know, the big organic farms aren't doing organic practices, they're cheating. It kind of reminded me a little bit of, I worked the polls the last two elections. And so it actually hurts me that Wisconsin thinks that we don't have, you know, honest elections, when I believe in my heart, I was there, you know, from 7 a.m. till midnight counting. From your point of view, how do you talk to people about, you know, when they say, oh, that's, you know, people cheat?
You know, I think that the important thing, when I go to a farm and they say, I don't understand why you're spending so much time making me provide all of this verification of what I'm doing to get my certification, yet there's these other farms that everybody knows that they're not doing. And the one thing I like to tell them is, you know, yes, it is very important that we have oversight on what those other farms are doing. And I'm really glad that certain practices have been called out. But what you have to remember is that when I walk away from your farm today, you know that I held up the integrity of the organic inspection and that your farm is following the rules, because I can walk away and say that we checked that and it did. And, you know, and I think that's very organic and farm specific, but I think it also speaks to whether you're talking about the elections or, you know, how we as a local government conduct ourselves. Oftentimes it's easy to say, oh, but look at them, you know, they're not doing it. And, you know, we can listen to certain politicians say, well, this person didn't win, so they must be doing something wrong. And if we know that when we walk away from what we're tasked to do with the integrity that we uphold to do it right, we can't worry about whether or not somebody believes us or not, you know. And that's, I think it goes across the board, which is how we communicate with each other. You know, there's always... some of the most controversial things that I have to deal with as the mayor often turns into the, like, oh, but what did they do? And the finger pointing. And I think that's what, no matter what you are tasked with doing, you have to conduct your own self with the integrity so people can say, well, I know that went well. And then, of course, work hard to make sure that the other people are holding themselves to the same integrity.
Yeah, it was hard not to take it personally when I heard that Wisconsin was, some people were probably the vocal minority, saying we need to recount. And it also hurts me, too, when I hear people say organic isn't, you know, because I know inspectors like you, and they really work very hard.
Right. You know, and the same thing with, you know, poll workers. Our local elections clerk here in Viroqua, she takes this so to heart. And I was speaking to her about this morning. It's like, what message would you give to people who are questioning whether our local elections are, you know, if there's any thought of fraud? And, you know, it almost, like, it was just an insult to her, because she does take it so seriously. And I know that locally here and across the state and across the country, I mean, let's be real, this voter fraud recount, and it's just a waste of resources to deflect away from what we really should be looking at, you know?
Yeah, like, thank you for saying that, because that's the way I feel, too, and I just didn't know whether that was a taboo thing.
No, I'll say it, you know, and I'll say that, you know, if our state government is willing to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to pursue something that's already been proven, just because you want to deflect from the real work that needs to be done, but you're willing to walk away from over $1 billion to expand our healthcare, it's just really hard for me to reconcile that. You know, if we have to be good stewards of our resources and our money, and it just, if you are a person who is standing up and saying that you want to make a decision based on the financial aspect and the good of the people, then stop wasting the money. These recounts and these investigations, and it's just not taking care of the people. But locally here, I, you know, can attest to the fact that it is very transparent.
Well, Karen, I can't tell you how much I admire your spunk. You just really have a good sense and a lot of clarity about what has priority. And I want to thank you for that and for all the good work you're doing to, you know, represent those kinds of issues around health and food and the environment and bringing it into the political sphere. So thank you so much for speaking with me today and all the good work you're doing.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I just really appreciate the message that you're putting out too, and the work that you do to keep these things in the forefront of our communication.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to an interview with Karen Mischel. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was yours truly, Charlie Knorr. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Good evening. You are listening to WDRT Viroqua.
Hello, and welcome to For the Wild podcast. I'm Ayana Young. Today we are speaking with Kimberly Ann Johnson.
They don't really think that pleasure is the pathway to the healing. And it is. And pleasure also, even the word pleasure, you and I will have way different meanings and associations, connotations, all of that to what it even means.
Kimberly Ann Johnson is a sexological bodyworker, somatic experiencing practitioner, yoga teacher, postpartum advocate, and single mom. Working hands-on in integrative women's health and trauma recovery for more than a decade, she helps women heal from birth injuries, gynecological surgeries, and sexual boundary violations. Kimberly is the author of The Call of the Wild, How We Heal Trauma, Awaken Our Own Power, and Use It for Good, as well as the early mothering classic, The Fourth Trimester, and is the host of the Sex Birth Trauma podcast.
Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us today and for your patience with my technical difficulties this morning. I am really look forward to this conversation, and the more that I